KUJZ is 95.3 The Score. And now,
check this out.
It's crunch time with Steve Tannen.
They think he's a righteous dude.
What I win?
Live from the Papa John studio.
Wait a minute. Let me get CB on the line. We're green lighting it. It's a go.
And I want full air support. I want tanks and some fire throwers. And I want explosions over here. And I want planes going. Cool.
Are they going to bust in here and arrest us?
It's crunch time on 95.3 The Score.
And we're back. I'll be back. They're back. It's us. I didn't see the remake of Terminator with Linda Hamilton where she's at that bridge. And she just looks at them and very calmly says, I'll be back. And then there's a big explosion, kind of a play on the original Terminator. So I don't know if that covers them all. It's going to have to. Welcome to Crunch Time. First time we've danced since the 20th, I believe. A week ago Friday. Time off. A belated Merry Christmas. Merry New Year. next to last day of 2019, next to last day of the decade. Much has gone down since we spoke. When we talked last time, it was about the rankings of the Oregon teams. Obviously, football hasn't moved. They're still at 6. Basketball's a top 5 team right now. They're 4th, the men. The women, with Stanford losing, are 2. We'll have Kelly Graves joining us at 5:10. We'll have a Richter scale per usual at 3:45. Warren Williamson of Duck Football News live on the scene in Pasadena. Join us at 4:30. We'll light him up at 4:45. We've got the national semifinals to talk about. A lot of NBA and NFL catch-up and awards and Serena and LeBron named respectively the Associated Press Athletes of the Decade for men and women. I'd be kind of curious to know how much of a lock that was. Without knowing, I would assume it was Jordan in the 90s. Just trying to think what else would be so obviously. I don't know, Babe Ruth in the 20s. I don't know if the AP gave out the award back then. The Babe wore lettuce under his hat in summer to keep cool. I read that this weekend for some reason.
Is that true?
Who the hell knows? I mean, the thing is, all right, I'm hot, put it on. All right, if it's 90 degrees and you have a baseball cap up, 8, 7, 2, 1, all right, it's hot again. Now all I do is have lettuce on my head.
I think there was another, I remember hearing about, I can't remember where, maybe it was like a guy on the Marlins also was like, no, this is real. You take a huge chunk of iceberg lettuce, you soak it in some water, put it in your hat and put it on top of your head, and you'll actually stay cooler. And I think like a guy still does that in baseball. I don't know if he's like also 900 years old like Babe Ruth is, but it might be a thing. Maybe this is something we have to test out in the summer.
That would be amazing. What's that under your head? I'm wearing lettuce. Hey, it was good enough for the Babe. It's good enough for me.
Why are you sweating so much? What's going on? It's not that warm. No, it's the wet lettuce keeping me cool.
It's just, I couldn't be cooler, man. Cool is a rule. In case you forgot, 284-8571. It's the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. The text line, which I did not check for 10 days. And you guys caught on. I got 2 messages. I've been saying, do not text me. For those who are like, I don't use email, I don't use Twitter. And to me, that it's like, well, that means while I'm not working, we're not communicating. How about the Duck soccer team with the announcement today? Graham Abel is the new soccer coach for the University of Oregon. You might not be that familiar with him. He was an assistant to the U.S. Women's National Team, World Cup winners the last two times in 2015, 2019. That is a big get. If you go to GoDucks.com, there's a picture with him with the last two World Cup trophies being held up in each hand. And so naturally, I was like, I really want to get him on the show, but he has not even made his way to Eugene. We've got the holiday. So we'll chat him up next week as far as what else is going on. So we've got NFL playoffs set. What an by the way, the Niners, once upon a time, you've got to go back to the 70s before Don Coryell took over the San Diego Chargers. They were known as the Cardiac Kids. And you've had some teams over the years who just, they're usually really good, but they never make anything easy. Ladies and gentlemen, I give you the 2019 San Francisco 49ers. I mean, look at their games. Last play against the Rams before that. Last play at Ravens. Last play at Saints. Last play. Seahawks. Last play. Cardinals. Last play. It just goes. And I, by the way, every game I gave you is over nine games. I mean, they went through the first part of the season where that wasn't happening. You know, they beat Tampa and at Cincy pretty easily. Cleveland, they handled the Rams. They shut out the Washingtons. Oh, almost cost me a buck there. They crushed Carolina to go to 7-0. So over their nine games, 1, 2, 3, 4, 6 of 9. The game wasn't over until triple zeros were on the clock.
And that's just the wins, too. Their losses have
been. No, I counted them all.
Oh, did you say Falcons?
Oh, I forgot about that.
Okay.
One. It's 7 of 9.
There you go.
The Falcon play, which everybody was thinking about during the last play to Hollister last night. He just leaned wrong.
I couldn't stop thinking about the Super Bowl. Like, I mean, Seahawks inside the 5-yard line, well, first, before the delay of game.
How the hell do you get a delay of game?
Also, that's just ridiculous. But the entire thing I was thinking about was like, oh my God, are they going to actually run it and like finally end the meme of like for the last 5 years of people being like, oh, they should have ran at the goal line. You had prime Marshawn Lynch back there. Couldn't be stopped. What are you doing passing? And then, like, was that going to make the Niners think? Because they brought in Marshawn probably to do that because yep. He jumped from the 19-yard line and hurtled over everybody when he scored earlier in the game. And so you're thinking, okay, we've brought him in to do the exact same thing. Everybody in that stadium is thinking, we're going to avenge a Super Bowl loss by getting the one seed in the playoffs. Here we go. It's that time. Delay game back to the five.
By the way, would anything have been better if they got to the one, they faked it to Lynch, and, like, the ball was intercepted by Richard Sherman or Jimmy Ward. They did the same exact thing.
Oh, yeah.
Everybody in the house is thinking they're never throwing again.
I thought their first play should have been they line up in that exact same formation that they had Marshawn in the backfield, the two receivers to the right, and they run the same play. Just like, it doesn't make sense to run it at the 25-yard line after a kickoff. But you know what? First play of the game, we're going to run the pass play again with Marshawn because everybody thinks it's going to be run. And we're going to show you we were right by throwing at the goal line 5 years later.
The one thing that a lot of people, I know that they hustled up to spike it. And it was like, man, you had them back on their heels. I don't understand why they didn't just run up to the line and have Wilson try and sneak it, because then you're all right there. You only cost yourself about 7 or 8 seconds, then spike it there and try to run third and fourth down. I mean, San Francisco was running a Chinese fire drill. They didn't know whether they were coming or going at that point.
Well, the other thing is Chris Collinsworth pointed this out, and everything was moving so fast, was like their left tackle or whoever it was that was in place got like knocked down and was hurt on the play that put them down inside the one. So you've got everybody rushing to get to like get set and spike the ball, and then Collinsworth is like, I think it was, is it a Fetty? He's like, oh, a Fetty's down. He's got to get up and get to the line.
And why was he 70 yards behind? behind the play.
He was hurt. He was down during that play, had to get up and run 20 yards to get set. They spike the ball, and then it looks like he's falling over. Is he hurt? Is he not hurt? Is this an injury timeout situation? Like, I don't know if Seattle thought, oh, we're going to have a timeout for an injury. Like, we'll have time to get everybody in to get the run call right again. And then all of a sudden, he had a quick shot of him. He's, you know, all hunched over, ready to go. And he's just like, ah, I got it. I got it. I'm good. No, we don't need anybody. Delay game. Season's over.
I don't know that I've ever seen anything exactly like that. A delay of game, I mean, it happens very rarely in the hurry up. I mean, if anything, I could understand in your haste to do an illegal shift or a false start, but really, with the time ticking of the essence, you don't get the playoff? That's... Leave it to San Francisco and Seattle to pull that off. Crazy. It's kooky talk, I tell you. It's kooky talk. A lot of bowl games on this Monday. Cal in the Red Box Bowl. Well, at least they're scoring points as opposed to last year. It's Justin Wilcox and Lovie Smith. Cal and the Illini. Some old school Big Ten. Dub Bears early in the second half, 11 minutes to go. They just called timeout. Bears knocking on the door, up 21-13, first and goal from the Illini 9. Florida and Virginia in the Orange Bowl, and in a game that just the essence of college football postseason. Western Kentucky beat Western Michigan 23-20. The Hilltoppers. What's Western Michigan? The Broncos? Yeah, all right.
They like the Golden Broncos.
I don't know what that means.
I just feel like they feel like the kind of, they wear a lot of brown and gold and things like that. I feel like maybe the Golden Broncos of Western Michigan. Sounds like a thing.
Is it accurate to say that each year now, because the Cotton Bowl's in the rotation and the Peach Bowl is in the rotation, if a conference is represented in the playoff, a traditional powerhouse bowl just looks lesser? I mean, when you read Virginia versus Florida in the Orange Bowl, my thought was, that's not very pizzazzy for the Orange Bowl, which, you know, historically has been, I mean, forever, one of the biggies. It seemed a little strange, but I think under the new format, in rotation, under the wrong circumstance, I mean, you know, you think about last year, it was Alabama. You know what? I guess the year before, Wisconsin was a 6. Miami got in as an 11. You know, it's kind of a rarity. I guess the first year of the playoff, it was Georgia Tech and Mississippi State, a number 10 versus 8.
Well, I was going to say, yeah, because you have the ACC, it's supposed to be, is the SEC champ, do they go to the Sugar Bowl? Okay, so you're always, so you've always got the runner-up of the SEC, so they're likely to kind of make their way in. And assuming they're, well, yeah, but then you get into the playoff and teams are pulled around and everything, but it's like you've always had a team from the ACC and you've always had at least one team from the SEC in, so you're automatically, or in the playoffs, so you're already down to, like, your second tier of teams. So, yeah, like, the Cotton Bowl I didn't care all that much for this weekend, and, like, the Orange Bowl, Virginia, really? Virginia football? Come on. Yeah, somebody has to win that other conference in the ACC. Like, it doesn't do much for me.
By the way, the when we left last time, I was calling out some Husky and Beaver fans who are now trying to belittle Oregon's accomplishment by playing in the Rose Bowl. One of the big OSU trolls called the Rose Bowl now. He says it's a third tier bowl game. And so people are like, do you understand what you're saying? Which, of course, he doesn't because he's a moron. But so if you're belittling the bowl, you're belittling the conference, and you play in the conference, can't win or contend in the conference, and can't even make a bowl, Do you think these people understand what a condemnation is of their program that they're trying to belittle the conference champs who are playing in the game that every single solitary coach and player and fan dreams about in this league from the days of the Pac-8 to the Pac-10 to the Pac-12? And none other than Pete Carroll, who has overseen the biggest dynasty of the modern era in this league, says our goal every year is to win the conference and play in the Rose Bowl. And all the guys, you know, Clay Matthews, all the great players. Yep, that's why we came here, want to win the conference and play in the Rose Bowl. And let's face it, aside from the national playoff games, which now we could kind of check off the LSU game because that wasn't a very good game, this Rose Bowl, if you know, I know you got to really try and decipher. So I've watched the CBS guys. I've heard the CBS guys. I've watched the ESPN guys. I've heard the ESPN guys. I've watched the Fox guys. I mean, people are about as excited for Oregon, Wisconsin as they are for any game except for Clemson, Ohio State, which lived up. And obviously this LSU Clemson game could blow big. I mean, if this ends up tight, we're going to get like Super Bowl ratings, I think, because it's just, I mean, these two teams landing here at a certain point after the Clemson comeback, folks are going to really be chomping at the bit because it'll be, the timing will be perfect. It'll go NFL playoffs on Saturday, NFL playoffs on Sunday, then championship Monday, I think so, the 13th. My math is bad. Is it a Wednesday? No, is it a? Yeah, it is a Monday. 2 weeks from today.
Yes. So, yes. Sorry, I was.
So you get divisional playoffs, setting up championship Sunday in the NFL, followed by that game. Boy, that's 3 good days of football.
Pretty good. Well, even if it was on the if it was on the 6th instead of the 13th, and you still had wild card round setting up divisional round leading into that national championship game, that's a really good 3 days of football too. I don't know why is there the extra week? Is it just too close to the other bowls and they wanted to really separate it or something?
Well, what's it usually been? Like the 1st to the 10th? And like I said, you got to be careful because the weekend comes into play. They learned their lesson about having it on New Year's Eve. Remember how bad the ratings were? And let's face it, by Saturday, did you know a college football fan who wasn't geared up to watch the national semis? I mean, I knew everybody who was. Oh, J.K. Dobbins is going pro. Not really surprising. I mean, he is fantastic, had an unbelievable season, and where he lands all time in a blue blood program speaks volumes. And I thought there was a point on Saturday where it's like, so has anybody ever rushed for 500 yards? It's like at 68 and 62 yards a carry. I mean, that's going to pile up pretty quickly. By the way, California scored. You know, if their quarterback didn't get hurt, you really wonder how much better their season could have been. And like I said, because of the history and getting to know his parents and Josh and watching Justin play, really hoping he has a whole bunch of success down there with the Bears. But as far as Dobbins, with his performance, even in defeat, he had second all time in 3 years, by the way. You know, you're talking Eddie George, Ezekiel Elliott, Braxton Miller. By the way, Braxton Miller and JT Barrett, top 10 as quarterbacks. Are those guys good athletes or what? Guys like Michael Wiley, Boone Heron, I wonder which school has like the most 3,000 yard rushers. Keith Byers, Chris Wells, Tim Spencer. Man, there's a throwback. And you look at, you know, obviously at the top, well, I shouldn't say obviously because not everybody's as old as me, but the only two-time Heisman winner, Archie Griffin, as great as Dobbins and Zeke and Eddie George were, he played 4 years. He had 924 attempts, 5,600 yards, but oddly enough, only 26 touchdowns. And, you know, the Buckeyes in those years, led by the crazy man himself, Woody Hayes, always in contention. But they only, you know, you, it's kind of interesting when you think about Ohio State versus Michigan. And Bo Schembechler never won a national title. And I think Woody Hayes may have won the one, was it in 1968? Yeah, I don't think that they won another, what you can see. You know, remember, they have to use it to have the UPI and certain other publications. But the AP National Championship, when you think about all those years, Woody Hayes may have won one in the early 50s, then the one in 1968. Schembechler never had one. So they were always in a position to get to the Rose Bowl. You know, occasionally you'd get a Purdue with Bob Greasy rise up, or, you know, into the 70s. Actually, I don't even know if I can think of another frigging Big Ten team that rose up to challenge either one of them. You know, Purdue again in 2000. With Drew Brees. But, man, J.K. Dobbins, to finish second all-time behind an almost uncatchable, because the problem with having 5,500 yards is kind of what you'll probably see with Jonathan Taylor. I mean, he's playing 3 years. He's rushed for like 8 billion yards. He's never even made it to New York. So my guess is he'll probably end up going pro.
On the the sports reference page for all-time leaders career rushing yards, Wisconsin has 8. Oklahoma State has 7. And those are
that's is Ron his, Dane one?
He is number one all time.
Okay,
yes. 7,000 yards.
that's really, and he played all 4 years. He played 96.
7,000 yards.
Yeah, Taylor is at 6,000 with Wednesday pending in 3 years.
Sorry, that's Oklahoma, not Oklahoma State.
Yeah, I well, Oklahoma State is probably just because of Sanders 2 years. You know, with his Heisman year wasn't even, they made it up. They just padded up. What did he have, like 2,700 yards? Something silly like that. But you look at Wisconsin with Dane, JT, Monty Ball, Gordon, Anthony Davis, James White, PJ Hill. I mean, these are all in the last 20 years since Dane left. You remember John Clay, Corey Clement, he left before. But, you know, James White was one of the feature backs with Oregon, as was, you know, Melvin Gordon, who made it to New York as a finalist with Amari Cooper and Marcus. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. Let's take a break. We'll be back. We'll have an update and more Crunch Time. 95.3, the score.
Crunch Time on 95.3 The Score is brought to you by Guarantee RV Supercenters. Family owned and operated for more than 50 years. Visit them online at guarantee.com.
It's now a double team comes. Pass to Mathis with 4 on the shot clock. Mathis pass underneath. Dante, he scores. Didn't even jump. Just threw it off the glass. Duarte, left wing. Dribbles to the free throw line. Now to Patterson. Into the lane. What a dunk! Addison Patterson with an absolute jam.
Well, something's got to happen there. Addison Patterson, we're just going to leave that there. We're not going to... Patterson's street's close to campus. I mean, somebody do something, for God's sakes. It just sounds perfect. By the way, crush Bama State, who is... They're not a very good team. But Ducks wrap up the non-conference portion of the schedule 11-2, climb to 4th in the AP poll, begin Pac-12 play Thursday in Boulder against the number, well, they're not ranked, but Colorado is 26th, so they're just outside the rankings as we welcome you back to Crunch Time 95.3 The Score. So a couple of you are texting suggestions as to what schools might have the most 3,000 career rushing yard dudes. Somebody suggested because historically they've always run it, Army and Navy, cadets with 5, the middies with 4. The most I've found so far is Wisconsin with 12, followed by Ohio State 11, Oklahoma 9, Nebraska 8. And I'm literally on the sports reference, clicking history stats rushing. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Clicking history stats rushing. Georgia, I got 6. Penn State, I got 7.
So you pick two arbitrary. 3,000 is a very strange number to go through, but that was your. I just went to the all-time leaders page, and I was like, "Look, if your school's up here a couple times, and if you're good enough to be in the top 100 that Sports Reference will have as their all-time leaders, I'll just stop there." And so that's why I said Wisconsin had 8, which is still the most. And no surprise as well that
when you said 8, what?
8 in the top all-time
leaders. Oh, I see.
Which all happened to be above 3,000 as well.
Okay, well, they've actually had 12 gain 3,000 or more in a single season. But, you know, they ran the ball when it was the Big Ten, 3 yards and a cloud of dust. And when things opened up a little bit more, well, they kind of ran the ball 3 yards and a cloud of dust.
They never went
full spread.
Of all of the teams that are lining up at the top of your list right now, it's all a bunch of physical, big team, you know, Big Ten football teams that like to run the ball a whole lot. Not really that surprising.
All right, so you got that going for you, which is nice. 284-8571. The Oregon
Tannenism
Fuel Injection Hotline. One of the final ones of 2019. Da da da. Da 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 da.
That's a new one.
It's my own personal music. So while I was technically off, while, you know, watching games and on Twitter and acknowledging a lot of the folks we follow that we have on the show, that we follow each other on Twitter, especially as they were landing in Southern California and providing some of the great coverage for the Rose Bowl, we got into a discussion that I actually talked with Rob Mosley about our last week before we went on vacation and Rob headed to Pasadena. And if you think about the Ducks this year, you know, history will, I mean, if you had to pick players that'll just pop, obviously Justin Herbert, Troy Dye, Javon Holland, by the end of the year, I think Kayvon Thibodeau was on everybody's tongue. C.J. Verdell with the 3 200-yard games, you know, the one against Washington State, ending up with, you know, almost 1,200 total yards. He'll probably be a standout, I think, because of the way he performed in the championship game. A lot of folks are, and because of his lineage, Brady Breeze, you know, as far as receivers go, the performance this year of Johnny Johnson III. But I was kind of thinking of if you had to pick one guy who just, man, Rock of Gibraltar, every game, solid, heard his name called a lot, but maybe did not get, yeah, I know it's a cliche, maybe the term under the radar a little bit. And I think the natural tendency is offensive linemen are so tough to evaluate. Could you just say all of them? But I also, one of the other big names is Penei Sewell, because he's a, you know, an unanimous All-American. And I think within the framework of Oregon fans, you know, you hear a lot about Lemieux and Hansen and Doc Throck. But Isaac Slade Matuatia, I just, you look at the guy who is fourth in tackles. Thibodeau, Funa, TD. And he's fourth in tackles for loss. Would you be surprised to learn he led the team, linebacker, in passes broken up, 11, followed by, you know, Thomas Graham, a defensive back, and Diamador Lenore, a defensive back. And I always use this phrase, but when Oregon swarmed to the ball, which really puts a ceiling on missed tackles if there's nine of them on a guy, how many times do you just remember seeing 41 get off the pile and be like, man, that dude is around the ball? So, yeah, he's on the list. He's probably my top guy, where maybe history doesn't view him in 2019 as the guy who pops first, second, or third on the Ducks, but I don't know that we remember 2019 this fondly without his performance game in and game out.
I also really liked watching Jordan Scott.
Yeah.
Like, him as a defensive tackle, and just, like, he's not the, he's just, like, he's a little cube. He's a little rectangle guy out there who just absolutely blows up plays as a defensive tackle. And, like, the only crazy tackles that you hear about all the time are guys like Aaron Donald, Ndamukong Suh.
Right, just light people up.
Yeah, they're just guys who, like, okay, we need to double team him because he's bigger, faster, stronger than any single offensive lineman. And if we don't double team him, he's just going to get a sack every play. And, you know, Jordan's not exactly that kind of player just yet, but watching him stop run plays and get through the middle and be right on top of the ball on the center, and like, I think it was one of the first plays against Nevada this year, he almost picked up the handoff like between, like, in the backfield from the quarterback and the running back. Like, it was one of the first plays of the defense had at home after the Auburn game, right. And I was just like, how is the defense going to respond here? Let me watch Jordan Scott. He, you know, blows by everybody, and I think if a running back wasn't back there to, like, pick up a blitz on, like, a weird handoff thing, he could have had a sack and a fumble, and, like, he would have had to choose between the two because he got back there so quick.
And being in the middle at his size to make those kind of plays with guys like draped on him.
Right, yeah.
It's, yeah, by the way, getting back to our running back conversation, it's like, okay, I'm sitting here in Pac-12 country, and there's a university named Tailback U. Yeah, USC had nine as well. So, well done there by a texter, 3210824. Charles White leads the way at more than 6,000 yards. Marcus Allen, 4,800 yards. Then the 3,000-yard patrol, AD, Anthony Davis, Ricky Bell, Ronald Jones, that Orenthal dude, Mike Garrett, their first Heisman winner, Reggie Bush. By the way, Reggie Bush, however, you also look at, he also has 1,300 receiving yards and 13 touchdowns. And then the most, and the guy who's ninth on the list is Lendale White. But, you know, the thing about USC during the dynasty era, you know, it seemed like they had two NFL backs, Lendale White and Reggie Bush. And, you know, you can go back and forth. You know, Sultan McCullough, you know, arrived in the 2000s. A guy like Joe McKnight would share carries with, you know, Chauncey Washington or somebody like that. So, yeah, you got to also take was, you know, obviously when Archie Griffin was the lead back at Ohio State, he was getting all the carries. You know, he would have 327 and, the quarterback would have 17, 11 from being sacked. So it was kind of like feed the beast. All right. Good contributions there. 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. I tell you what, a guy who we're obviously going to look forward to what he may do now as a sophomore on in multiple aspects, Mikhail Wright, who, you know, played every game, obviously, was an explosive kick returner. Not only the touchdown to really push USC to the brink as Oregon went into the locker room with all that momentum, but after the Travis Dye injury, all of a sudden, remember the kickoff against Washington State with a minute to go? You know, he took the kickoff, and you're like, oh, Number two has, oh, nice. Whoa. He, all of a sudden, it's like, they made a couple first downs. They kick a field goal and win this game, which they did. So, you know, looking forward. Somebody texted, and a good one, even though he missed one game injured, Bryson Young, a really important season, made some sacks, tackles behind the line of scrimmage, among the top five, six guys in total tackles, flew under the radar a little bit. You know, Verone McKinley had the four interceptions, a couple of spectacular ones, showing just great hands and the ability to kind of get a foot down. That one interception in the end zone at Autzen didn't even look real. So, yeah, so some good contributions there for sure. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline, as we work our way through the Monday edition after being off for what seems like a long, long time. Yet, when you have to wake up in the morning, suddenly it's like, today? Really? One more. Come on. Come on. I get confused on vacation, especially when there's a holiday right in the middle. I would say between Tuesday and early Friday, I had to double check the day no less than a dozen times.
I thought every day was Saturday.
When you're not working and you don't have to work the next day, that's a Saturday.
No, not even like ironically. I was just like, oh, I'm doing something that's not work related, so it must be a weekend. I know I don't have to work tomorrow. Today must be Saturday. Like, that was my mindset every single day. It was like, I you know, went up to my girlfriend's parents for Christmas. Ah, it was Saturday. Every day was Saturday. Had to leave the next day. We normally leave on Sundays. Today is Saturday. That's just what I thought for every day until yesterday when I was like, oh, it's Sunday. The NFL is here. I need to start getting back into preparing that Monday is tomorrow.
I found myself on Friday watching games with a sense of, all right, break out the laptop and the notepad. I might have to talk about this. And then by the time LSU and Oklahoma kicked off on Saturday, it was like, yep, now the weekend is here. Now I've got the mentality of whatever is happening in the world of sports is now talk show fodder, potentially. By the way, I know this sounds mean, but the fan in me is like, yeah, Giants coach Shurmur had to go. And I know wishing somebody ill on their job, but no, it's not like he's losing his $17.50 an hour gig at the local mill. I mean, he made mills. So unless he's an idiot, he should be okay financially. But how does he lose his job and they keep the GM Gettleman? That's unbelievable. That's unbelievable. Actually, it's surprising because that is not what you would call the Giant way. They've usually been better about seeing the big picture, and if one guy goes, then it's a package. It's like, we're going to clean house, but we're not going to mop. Maybe we're not going to vacuum behind the sofas. It's like, it's not getting me. I'm not pleased.
How long has Gettleman been GM? Has it been 3 years? Is this his second coach now that he's fired? Because he got rid of
From Carolina, was it?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, that sounds right. Because
he was previously the GM there. Actually, this is just his second season.
Oh wow!
It just seems longer. Okay. All right, that brings us to break time. We'll do just that. We'll come back and we'll wrap up Crunch Time on a Monday with the Richter Scale next. 95.3 The Score.
Today's show is brought to you by the Coors Light Frost Brewed Sports Desk. Coors Light is the official sponsor of your Oregon Ducks and the Coors Light Refreshing Tweet of the Day. Tweet Steve at SportsTalk953 for your chance to get involved. Coors Light, the world's most refreshing beer.
Go quick, first down and 10 from the 30. Burrow wants the end zone. It is caught, and another touchdown. Justin Jefferson. That's his fourth touchdown of the game. 30 yards and another six for LSU.
Steve Levy, ESPN. Fourth of the game? This is fourth of the half. 14 catches, 227 yards, 4 touchdowns. Burr ends up 29 of 39, 493 and 7. They did sack him once, so that'll learn him. That was ridiculous. Look forward to a game like that, and it's like, well, what are you doing? The game's over. Good God. I've got a headache just thinking about it. All right, 284-8571, the Oregon Fuel Injection Hotline. It's Monday. It's crunch time. Let's do a little something we call Richter scale-ish. Richter scale.
Well, it's big and terrible. More frightening than I ever thought possible.
Sounds kind of good, doesn't it?
Other people want it. It must be good.
So it's bad. How bad?
Oh my God, that's the worst thing I ever heard in my life.
Hi, everybody.
Yo, Doc Nick.
Welcome to what probably should be a long week in review, Richter scale, but I mean, really all the big stuff happened this weekend, so that's all we're going to talk about. Like you were just talking about, the college football playoff semifinals happened, and they were both incredible in their own unique ways. LSU setting offensive records, scoring 63 points. Joe Burrow, 8 total touchdowns in that classic Big 12 defense that Oklahoma is known for, put this one to bed early. Like, literally put me to bed. I took a nap halfway through the second quarter. I woke up just before halftime, and I was bored the rest of the second half, too. The Clemson-Ohio State game was a tale of two halves. One heck of a football game. Trevor Lawrence looked like a beautiful stallion with his mane of flowing hair in the wind all night long, as the Buckeyes were completely unaware that Lawrence could do anything on the ground. There were calls by the officials that had a major impact as well, taking away one of the Buckeyes' leaders on defense via a questionable targeting call, and then calling a catch fumble defensive touchdown and incompletion, and Clemson really took off from there. All in all, we get one of the best all-around teams in college football this year in LSU, taking on a Clemson team that has not lost a game since 2017, and oh yeah, they're reigning national champions. How do you rate this upcoming 2020 national championship matchup?
10. Go Tigers. Wah, 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 and I mean the Clemson time.
Yeah, you have to be very specific when you say the Tigers or the team that plays at Death Valley.
It's weird.
It doesn't work.
Who was it on ESPN said the loser can't call their place Death Valley anymore?
Ooh. That'd be rough.
Got to come up with a newbie.
Staying with those college semifinals, it divided Twitter even more than it normally does, with plenty of talks about a real hot-button topic, playoff expansion. By about 1:45, when LSU was clearly on their way to winning and maybe putting up 100 points, many were saying, this is why you stick with four. Do we really need more teams getting blown out and watching bad football games like this? I even saw one person that tweeted, the BCS was better than this, and that was certainly a take. Then we had the Clemson Ohio State magic, and that was when everybody decided that the expand to 8 crowd had to get their takes in, get the conference champions involved, let the at-large teams fight against the big dogs to avenge their seasons. LSU would have blown anyone out. We could have gotten 2 more really good games like this one. Neither side was wrong, but also neither side was right, and it's kind of a fun debate that moved absolutely nowhere this weekend. But how big of an impact did the 2019 semifinal games have on the possibility of expansion?
Huh. That's a good question.
Thank you.
It remains to be seen. I think I don't want to dismiss the importance of the actual championship game, but I don't think it really had that big of an impact. Some people are always going to believe there needs to be more to kind of leave open the possibility of the upset. Things do go in cycles. So I'm going to split the difference and call it a 5.
Semifinal Saturday led directly into the last week of the regular season, where about 1,000 different things might have happened in determining the final playoff seedings. The Packers trailed all games against the Lions, and on the last kick of the game turned out to be a win that got them the 2 seed and a bye in the NFC. But the biggest shock of the day was the Patriots, who lost to the Miami Dolphins at home, while the Patriots were starting their starters to Ryan Fitzpatrick. New England is playing in their first wild card round game since 2010. 10, and it was such a shocking result that the Chiefs ended up with the 2 seed, and Kevin Harlan was doing play-by-play for 2 games at one time. It was amazing. That was just the morning games. The only drama in the afternoon was which team was going to fall backwards into winning the NFC East, and for 5 minutes it might have been the Cowboys, but it's the Eagles. Yay. How exciting a finish was Week 17 of the 2019 season?
Yeah, a lot on the line. I mean, there was a lot that was determined, and only a couple of teams really had a winner go home or somehow sneak in. I'm going to give that a 9. That was fun. I was riveted the whole day.
The afternoon games were lacking to me. Like, once the Texans decided they were going to sit everybody and Tennessee could just waltz to a win if they wanted to, it took away all the fun. Because you could have possibly still had the Steelers or the Raiders get in, I don't know. The afternoon was kind of boring to me. Last one here. It is Black Monday in the NFL. A plethora of coaches were handed pink slips and million-dollar buyouts, and one of them who won't be getting one is Dan Quinn, who won a whole bunch of meaningless games to end the season for the second year in a row, and he gets to keep his job, which is great. Freddie Kitchens is out in Cleveland preaching discipline and then having one of the least disciplined teams in the league, as well as losing to Cincinnati. We'll get you fired for that. Plus, Pat Shurmur out in New York and the Washington football franchise fired their GM. And that's kind of it. Not sure what Jerry Jones is waiting for with Jason Garrett, but whatever. How big of an impact will these coaching vacancies have on the NFL?
Can I say it depends who they hire? If they go for some fresh blood a lot, or if they start retreading, probably not all that much. Although, I guess technically Belichick was once a retread. There's multiple openings, probably end up with 5 or 6. That's a chunk, that's a percentage, and it's going to be top heavy because I think everybody except for Peterson in the NFC East is going to be gone. So I'd rate that about a solid 7, no question about it. All right, looking ahead to the 4 o'clock hour of sports talk at the bottom. We'll talk with Warren Williamson of Duck Football News, who's been providing some great coverage and shots and interviews from down in Pasadena. We'll wrap sports talk hour one with Light 'Em Up, a lot of worthy candidates considering how long we've been gone. And then at 5:10, we'll talk Duck Hoops with Kelly Graves. And awful lot to recap. Want some thoughts on that Clemson comeback, NFL playoffs, more Duck football as we're now about 46 hours away from the kickoff down at the Rose Bowl against Wisconsin. I have some thoughts about Andy Avalos as one of the top 5 new hires of this most recent season. So hang tight. Sports Talk, 4 o'clock hours next. 95.3 The Score.
Have you ever been to a volcano?